Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. It's Liz Loza, Matt Harmon, Brett Rader, our fearless leader, producing for us once again. Matt, how is quarantine day 11-ish going for you?
Well, the days are all essentially kind of running together. Who knows at this point? I feel very fortunate that my stock of sweatpants has been sufficient so far to make it through this. But overall, I mean, it's weird. I'm definitely like, it's good. I think that, you know, I've got a lot of time with the new pup to get her acclimated to society. Well, not society, but at least like,
distance from that, please.
Not society, but, you know, things that aren't going to destroy her at every turn, which she is slowly but surely figuring out that pretty much everything is not out to get her. But, you know, for the most part, it's good. Just plugging along, I guess. It's weird being on Twitter. Like, I have to say, I think this is kind of a little meta, but it's a little weird being on Twitter and like seeing, you know, different pandemic projections sandwiched between, you're sandwiching a tweet that's like, are we sure that Henry Ruggs is the best third receiver in this draft class? Like, what the hell are we doing here? It feels a little strange, but yeah, welcome to your football podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a time where everybody is having their moments, right? Like, there are some days that I'm like, this is fine. Here's a silver lining. And there are other days that I'm like, we're all going to die. So yeah, it's up and down. Also, Matt, I do have to take issue with the fact that you're only wearing sweatpants, because this morning I said to myself and out loud, because I'm slowly unraveling, you know, people without kids are like working on that summer body, and people with kids are like, I'm never wearing pants again.
Well, no, I don't think that's necessarily, well, the two don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? Like, and also let's be clear, when I say I'm wearing sweatpants, I'm wearing joggers, which is a very specific brand. Yeah, a very specific brand of sweatpants that's like, look, I can wear sweatpants, but not look like I've completely given up on my life. And, you know, I've launched myself into an alcohol infused, you know, vacation from regular life and society. Although I guess we all have, you know, left ourselves into a vacation of regular life and society. But no, I mean, what's the point? What am I putting? Who am I putting jeans on for? What's the point of?
Well, I think the distinction is that you, who does not have kids, should be able to fit into your jeans when this is all over. Oh, those of us with children. And there's going to be a couple of days of lying down on my bed and like trying to get that zipper up for sure.
I completely understand. And it's not an inability to fit into the clothes. It's more of just
a wantedness.
Yeah. What's the point? Like, if I'm going to be around my house all day, I might as well, you know, be comfortable. I mean, the fitness part of it is a little strange, right? Like, we were actually thinking about ordering an exercise bike for the house, not a Peloton, because we're not elitists like that. I'm talking like a $150, you know, bike to put in the guest room or something like that. But for the most part, it's like taking these online classes or whatever, or like if you've got the home gym set up before this whole pandemic situation, you're working on a cheat code, really, because it is definitely tough, like not having a gym. But we're making it work. Yeah, we're making it work.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm very happy for you. I could talk about this forever, but I won't. Speaking of things and speaking of saying, what's the point? Let's talk about running backs.
Awesome segue.
Todd Gurley, who we talked about on last week's episode, at the time had been released from the LA Rams, and there had been rumors that Atlanta, the Falcons, immediately jumped on bringing him in, but the money just didn't seem to make sense. And yet this team did manage to bring Todd Gurley back to the state where he became famous as a member of the Bulldogs, right? His name is scrawled all over Georgia's record books, and he signed a one-year, $5 million contract. I think all told, this is a pretty good deal for both sides, because for a minimal cost, you get, you know, people are going to talk about, well, Todd Gurley's had these knee issues since his junior year at Georgia, the ACL tear there against Auburn, right? Like that game, and all through the Super Bowl run and last year and load management, but also there's a chance that he will be more fully recovered now, and it's only a one-year deal. And also, just from a business standpoint, from a ticket sales standpoint, from a jersey gear standpoint, bringing Todd Gurley back to Atlanta makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, all told, he's making over $10 million from both teams combined here this year. Like, he's a winner, right? Like, I wrote up free agency winners and losers, and I think you can talk about the Rams as kind of a loser, not necessarily because, like, losing Todd Gurley is this massive hit to what they want to be. Like, they're essentially paying him $20 million to go away. But I love this for Gurley, because this is kind of, like, in terms of the money he got and how quickly he was signed, I definitely think that was a pretty big win for him. Like, that's huge. And I love your point about the fact that this is good for the Falcons from just an intrigue standpoint. Like, I think I saw that graphic, you know, that the NFL put out, like, look at all these first round picks that the Falcons offense is playing with. And it's like, well, who gives a shit? Like, Hayden Hurst was drafted in the first round. No one cares. Like, it's great. Like, I still think they're probably a pretty good offense, but whatever. Like, but to your point, like, yeah, it's a great story too. Like, I saw Gurley say that, you know, Julio Jones came to his house and checked in on him, like, after he got cut. And that was, like, started having the wheels in his brain turn. Like, mm-hmm. Atlanta might be a great place to go back to. And, you know, I actually think if Gurley is physically at, you know, whatever percentage
80%.
You want to put at it.
Give me 80%.
75%, 70%. Like, this is a really good situation for a back that, you know, obviously has a lot of questions, but, you know, Devonta Freeman was essentially could have been, you know, that great bargain pick, but he looked like dust for most of last year, but really never had any true challenger step up. And as the roster is constructed right now, I don't see much of a challenge for Gurley here. So I think there's a chance he could be, you know, a good bounce back player at still just like 25, 26 years old here in his second home in the NFL.
I agree. And when we look at the numbers, obviously Freeman's departure opens up a lot of touches for Gurley. Freeman averaged 17 touches per game last year. That was 13 carries and 4 receptions. He was the RB21 fantasy-wise overall. Gurley last year, you know, we think about the decline, but there was still some stability. He was still a top 15 fantasy running back. He also averaged 17 touches per game, 14 on the ground, 2 via the air. So while neither the Rams nor the Falcons run blocking units were particularly good, you'd have to say that the Falcons, you know, we're pretty bad. Football Outsiders rank them 24th. So very close to the bottom there. But I do think, you know, there was the first round pick from 2019 that Chris Lindstrom, Falcons had. Like, there's another year for him to marinate. And then they are obviously pretty confident in his abilities because they added Justin McCray, who was on the Browns, to a one-year deal, but purely as a backup, so there's depth there. So I think that, you know, we know they have a vertical attack with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and now Hayden Hurst. And there does seem to be some tempting balance here. And so I ask you from a fantasy standpoint, over under RB20 for Todd Gurley overall.
Yeah, I'm gonna go, that's a really perfect one.
Meaning over, like, is actually under, right?
What? I think wait, like, what?
Right? So over, oh no, never mind. So if 20 is the line, over 20 is 21 and under. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I'm going to go under, meaning, like, I think he's like running back, you know, 18, 19.
Yes.
Yes. Nice.
Do you know what I was trying to convey? Right. Like, under the number, but not under the threshold.
Correct.
Correct. Okay.
Correct.
So you would say under RB20.
Yeah. I think like 18, 19. That's like perfect for him.
I have 17 in my notes. So we're about the same.
We got to turn rankings in this week. What the hell is that about?
Girl, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Close the show. It's a tease. It's already in the outline. Let's move on to Melvin Gordon.
God,
look at your face right now. By the way, I can like see you.
Well, this is part of, I got to rank this year now. Like, they're officially making me
rank now. Welcome to work.
Gross. I've like jokingly in a conversation with our boss, he said, I don't mind putting this on the air either. He said, well, you know, you can start, it'll start out with just consensus ranks to that you can start. I was like, well, cool, I'll have those and then I'll just hit submit. That's what you're getting from me. I think consensus is always almost accurate anyways, right?
No, it's not. It's wild. It's wild because there's always these like people who are like, but I love Tyler Boyd. And you're like, well, I still don't think he's going to be the like wide receiver four this week. So messes everything up.
Terrific.
So let's talk about Melvin Gordon. Terrific, indeed. Terrific, as John Elway would say. He was signed to the Broncos' 2-year, $16 million deal with $13.5 million guaranteed. Of course, you had all of football Twitter now clamoring about Philip Lindsay and guessing about Royce Freeman. I'm not innocent here. I posted a Twitter poll asking where Freeman would go, whether he'd stay in Denver, what people thought if he'd go to Detroit, Buffalo, the Giants. This was pre-Deion Lewis, sexy signing.
Spicy.
So the winner was Detroit with 44%. And then, you know, Buffalo was second place and then Denver third.
I don't know. I mean, the Royce Freeman part of it, I don't know where, what, I can't imagine that there would be anybody like clamoring to trade for Royce Freeman. I mean, maybe someone flips like a late round draft pick or something and brings him
like
in his depth.
Like a sixth or a seventh. Detroit makes sense if they're going to willing to flip a sixth or a seventh to back up Kerryon Johnson. You've got a defensive minded coach that wants to very, very emphatically run a run first offense. And you know that Kerryon like can't stay healthy as much as you like him. And his pad level is a little bit problematic. So Royce Freeman landing there for depth and a cheap pick makes sense to me.
Yeah, I guess a late round pick's fine. Maybe even a swap of picks or something. I just don't think he has too much value. And I just don't think there's a lot of value in this situation. Like, I've already seen people cropping up with the debates of like, oh, I'm taking Gordon confidently over Philip Lindsay. Or, oh, no, Philip Lindsay's going to be way too cheap because of Melvin Gordon being there. It's like, who cares, man? Like, I think my perspective on this is I'm going to probably choose to not go crazy over either. I'm probably not going to have a strong take one way or another because number one, like split backfields can be very valuable in fantasy. Like we've definitely seen times when even Melvin Gordon has been a useful guy while still having an Austin Eckler or a Danny Woodhead, you know, someone else kind of popping off in that secondary spot. But I'm not confident that Denver is going to be that kind of offense. I'm not confident that they have that type of line. I'm not confident that they're like, even if Drew Lock takes another step and becomes like an established good quarterback, I don't know that they have the collection of talent around him or that even at this point in his career, he's that type of guy that's going to have, you know, a top 15 offense that funnels two backs to relevancy. So essentially I'm willing to be flexible in this situation to a point that I'm really saying like I don't care one way or another which of these guys I prefer. I just am not going to have that strong of an opinion on it.
Well, I think a couple of things. It's not surprising to me that Denver made the signing. When you look at Elway, he's more of a conservative old school coach, obviously his head coach. And there's a trend, right, that defensively minded head coaches tend to lean towards a run first approach offensively. So this makes sense for me. And it also makes sense because, this time, well, maybe last summer, heading into the 2019 season, we saw a lot of talk when Philip Lindsay was injured. I believe he had a wrist injury about how Royce Freeman was getting more receiving reps and how the team was concerned about Lindsay's durability because of his diminutive size. And so it does make sense to me that Denver made the sign. It's only a 2-year deal. And we've seen what Gordon can do on the goal line. And the YPC is set aside because of if I have to talk about Melvin Gordon's YPC because he's a goal line back and like the math behind that, I don't want to say anything crazy because we're in crazy times. So I'm just going to say, I will scream. How about that?
There you go.
But I do think it makes sense. And also, you know, you mentioned the offensive line and I've heard that argument and the default is always like, well, it's not like the Chargers had that great of an offensive line. However, he did have his fullback from college, Derek Watt, blocking for him, which I do think helped tremendously, even from we've talked ad nauseum a couple of weeks ago about connective tissue and chemistry and timing and relationships. And I think that probably benefited Gordon much more than anyone is talking about. So I agree that when you're looking at which of these two running backs to favor, I would say that favoring Melvin Gordon makes sense if you're looking for like a who's going to get the most touches. I think Gordon has the more reliable three down skill set. But your point about this not being a particularly prolific offense is one to consider when trying to sort these all together. And you know what, Matt, while you're doing your rankings.
Great. Terrific. Can't wait to do that. To be clear, though, I do think this is a good signing for the Broncos from like an NFL perspective. I think actually all of these signings that we're probably going to talk about over like on the show, they're really good NFL signings. I just think for fantasy, like it's great that the Broncos have another offensive piece of talent, because I think Cortland Sutton's a stud. I think that Noah Fant has a lot of potential, and I think Lindsay's a good back. But after that, it's just not really nothing around Drew Lock.
I mean, when they get Henry Ruggs, you know, yeah, I think they have the 15th pick.
Yeah. And I think that's probably, I mean, everybody's projecting that one. That'll be great. But it just as it currently stands, any sort of offensive talent around your young quarterback is a good thing. So I think it's a good move for Denver. I just don't necessarily there's just no point, I think, in taking a strong stance in fantasy, because who knows what could happen. And usually debates that start with, well, they're paying this guy this much money, that means that, usually those things didn't turn to flames.
You have to throw that argument. You're totally right out the window, because Lindsay was an undrafted free agent, on a rookie deal that they're paying peanuts for. So
yeah, correct. Who beat out a third round pick, by the way, another guy who had more juice behind him from a pure capital perspective.
Absolutely. That amplifies your point. Let's do one quick over under, though, in terms of total carries. OK, because Lindsay has yet. He was supposed to be the pass catching back, right? The back that they used on passing downs. And he averaged just 2.2 catches per game, even with his injuries. So let's Melvin Gordon averaged about 4 receptions per game. Over the past 2 years, even given his, the holdout at the top of the 2019 season. So total touches, Melvin Gordon, 17 total touches over
per game
average.
Under.
Interesting.
Under.
Lindsay averaged 16 touches per game last year. I'm sorry, 14. 16 total, 14 carries, 2 catches. So 16 total. You think it's going to be – well, here's just the last two questions. So I think this part is a little bit interesting, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot over the summer. Do you think this will be a three-headed Hydra, in which case under for sure, or do you think Freeman will be out of the equation, whether he is on a different team or just left out in any real meaningful, touch way?
If I had to bet, I would say he's on the team but left out in any meaningful way, but still in enough of a way – that it slices a tiny bit from each guy, maybe 1.5 carries per game or something like that.
So then I agree with you under. I'm imagining a scenario in which Freeman is not on the team, in which case I would say probably this 17.5 would be the line for me. And I could see Gordon, averaging about 17 total touches a game. Makes sense to me. I mean, this is assuming health from Lindsay. Okay. Do you want to move on, or would you like to talk more about the touches in Denver?
Well, one more thing. No, yeah, I've got nothing, more to say about that.
So let's talk about Cam Newton officially released from the Panthers. It is the end of an era. Now, he was gifted, I suppose, with the opportunity to seek out a trade, which seems a little backwards, but he wasn't able to find any suitors. And then the team wasn't able to find any suitors despite all of the tap dancing they did in Indianapolis in February. He's officially cut. He's obviously not happy about it. So is there now a situation where he is just a backup, which seems super weird, or do the Chargers go out and get him?
I don't know. I feel really this situation gives me like a gross feeling in my stomach. Obviously, from like a Panthers perspective, this is just about like the stone worst way that the Cam Newton era could end. I feel that part of me feels like the team kind of did him wrong, because it's great, like he's cut and officially can like search for his own team, but with just so many complications of what's going on right now, like facilities are closed, you know, like, right. And as much as like they
he pass a physical on Monday though?
Yeah, he passed a physical, but teams are going to want him to pass their physical. Like that's that's the problem. Like it's just, and it might just look, it might just be not even necessarily like the Panthers have done him wrong, but like the, it's just a
victim
cruel,
of circumstance.
Yeah, a cruel twist of fate that this happens to be happening right now in the middle of this pandemic, like for Cam Newton. And it's just bad universal timing for no reason.
I just, I know you made that point. Just real quick. I know you made that point and it was very salient and it has shown to be absolutely correct. I just don't understand a world in which if somebody, like if Spanos wanted to go get him, he certainly has a private jet. And I mean, there's like a Southwest plane going over my house right now. Like the flights are grounded, you know?
I've got the perfect view of the airport right from my damn home office here. Like I see planes going up and down every day.
Like I feel like this is a very convenient excuse for teams that aren't motivated or maybe are trying to make the situation so dire to save themselves some money and gain some leverage.
I completely buy into that, too, that it's a bit of, like, plausible deniability that, like, listen, we can't bring in a guy with injuries like Cam because, you know, I can't get him into our facility. Meanwhile, your boy Nick Foles, you know, he had, like, a screwed-up collarbone last year, you know? Like, there are guys getting signed. Again, all in a theoretical perspective, everything is here. Like, Todd Gurley can go in and flunk the Falcons physical and, like, fingers frickin' crossed, you know, a month or two. And then he's not even on the team anymore. You know, there's all these things that are sort of kind of weirdly up in the air. But for Cam and everything that's going to go on there, like the problem is, you know, I talked about this before the free agency process even began, which is that there are too many quarterbacks available and not enough seats. Like at this point, really, you're right. Like the Chargers are theoretically a seat open, even though they say we're good with Tyrod and then, you know, whoever becomes available in the draft. And I kind of buy that is a way to go about it. The Patriots are obviously theoretically a spot open. And then really, like what else is there?
I mean, the Chargers, I think you're right. Like the Chargers are either sticking to Justin Herbert or Jordan Love or Jalen Hurts. And again, we talked about this last week. Like there are definite issues and disagreements about what style of quarterback the Chargers want. And also their need to sell tickets because it is real. They are not selling. Like you're near the airport. Back in a time when we were able to fly, you'll fly over the facility. It is being built. Its construction is still going. Yep. And the PSLs are not being sold for the Chargers. So Cam Newton would do that. He gives you the maneuverability, in theory, again, based on this physical, whether he were to pass or not, behind a shoddy offensive line. But, you know, I'm imagining Justin Herbert did show more athleticism at, like, the Senior Bowl and during that week of practice. And I'm being legit here, like, because that was something he needed to show more of, his athleticism, his mobility, his ability to, like, run and stuff. He was able to show more of that, but are you really going to like throw this otherwise kind of statuesque? And I say statuesque because I'm like the asterisk is for a quarterback in 2020, right? They all can run a little bit now. Do you put that kind of quarterback behind that offensive line in your first year at this brand new stadium? Like that just seems wild to me.
Right, because I mean, they've done work on the offensive line. The Trey Turner trade, they made a signing in free agency. Like they've done some work. They've got a big hole at left tackle. Like it would actually make perfect sense. Like go sign Cam Newton and then take one of these really good offensive tackles at the top of the draft. But
that is exactly the move that whatever. I'm not working in a front office. You can hear a helicopter over my house right now.
Someone's flying. I think it's tough. I think just the entire Cam thing is really difficult because I really do struggle to find a landing spot for him. I actually think that like I've seen this just kind of whispered about here and there, like the Rams would be a fun spot for him to land in too. Like just, it's a total balls to the wall move. But
what a way to stick it to the Chargers too. Your theoretical crosstown rivals.
Right. Like really just like, no, we're going to just do this thing. It's just,
but then he'd have to wear that new logo on the cap. And I think that would be, man. He wouldn't do it. He'd be like, nah, I'm not doing any promos with that weird Charger symbol.
The back of the president's hair on their helmets there. Look, I got to tell you, like I fired up Game Pass.
You can't unsee it once you see it.
Once you see it, you cannot unsee it. Like, I don't care. I don't care where you stand politically. Once you see that, you cannot unsee that. Believe it. I tell you what, I fired up Game Pass this morning to chart DJ Chark for reception perception. And seeing that Rams logo populate like on the game grid or whatever, for whatever week I was looking through the schedule for the Jaguars, it was like, that's a little jarring. It's a tough look for our Rams.
The Rams are interesting. I've heard bandied about Buffalo because of the connection with Sean McDermott.
I think they're too committed to Allen. The Jaguars are another one I've seen like light whispers on. Doesn't make a ton of sense. Considering they're kind of
what,
like,
they just did.
Yeah, they're like shedding some salary. They really look like they're going towards a full rebuild with a very cheap quarterback. Again, like the Patriots do stand out. I think that the Patriots make a lot of sense from just look like, let's keep, I don't know how, if you're a Patriots fan, you look at this roster and you're like, you feel good at all. Like from an offensive perspective, their depth chart is atrocious. And I mean, what, I don't know who Jarrett Stidham is. I don't know anything about that experience. Why not look at a guy like Cam, who Bill Belichick, by the way, has, like, I know he blows smoke every now and again, you know, but he's really gone into detail about how defending a quarterback like Cam is really challenging. And I think that there's probably some excitement there that would make the Patriots offense immediately much more interesting. But all of this with Cam is just really unfortunate that I think we're at this point, like, talking about, like, wow, let's find a spot for him here somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the last place that maybe he could end up is in Washington, reunited with Ron Rivera, like give Dwayne Haskins some breathing room to kind of like figure things out.
Kyle Allen is there now. I mean, that's the other wild thing. Like, how does Kyle Allen have a larger trade value than Cam Newton? How does he manage to get more chatter in the trade market than Cam Newton? And I don't foresee a situation where Rivera is like, give me Cam and also his old backup. Now where I'm carrying three quarterbacks, and we know that Dwayne Haskins is a little bit, you know, maybe not the most focused all the time, despite what Hal has to say.
Hal is how we would pronounce it.
Hal,
thank you. I think that Washington's interesting. Like the Kyle Allen thing, by the way, like the smart man football take is, well, he's a very cheap contract and he knows the system, and that is why he was traded, you know, and Cam Newton has no trade value because he had a big salary and a lot of injury questions. There are no such questions with Kyle Allen. But like, what the f-? Kyle Allen's traded for a fifth round pick? Like, that's kind of a haul for the Panthers to get for a guy that probably wasn't going to make the final 53. Like, that's in it. That of all the trades, like, again, I know there's like relative salary things, but my immediate thought was like, Calais Campbell traded for a fifth round pick. Kyle Allen traded for a fifth round pick. What world are we living in here?
But I think we're living in Tepper's world, and that, like it or not, the stones on this dude are enormous, and he has been very clear about this being his project. Like, he got himself. The part I love about this, and let's use this to transition into, let's use this to be a bridge to Teddy Bridgewater, who is definitely also a bridge. I'll get into that in a second. But Tepper tapped a head coach who has branded himself as a maverick, right? Who has built his reputation at BYU on coaching up these underdogs, Baylor, and cast-offs. And so Tepper is like, this is my spirit animal. We don't need Cam Newton. We don't need the antics. Sorry, Greg Olsen. I appreciate your time, but go find a booth or whatever, right? And this is a new regime. I'm putting my stamp on it. I mean, wasn't he even like ripping statues down and stuff? Like, this is his world, and we are all examining it. The fact that he could even get a fifth round pick, you're right, for Kyle Allen is evidence of his aggressivity. Whether that works out or he knows when to temper it at times remains to be seen. But also taking Teddy Bridgewater and saying like, oh, I know I know the narrative about this guy is that he's a manager and he's safe. And maybe that remains to be true. And I think when you look at Robbie Anderson joining the team, you've got Curtis Samuel and Robbie Anderson, by the way, my apologies as a Samuel truther.
Oh, don't worry. I have a full defense ready to go on this
great.
One. Don't worry.
When you add those guys and you look at Teddy Bridgewater's skill set, at least in recent times, they don't exactly align perfectly. And yet, to me, that indicates either Royals like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring back like vintage Teddy, even though he never really was.
Never
like,
really
the
was.
Strongest arm yeah. quarterback, but fine. He could be electric at least before the knee injury. And also, he is a placeholder for what we are creating. And I've got a 7-year long runway to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that why I like the Robbie Anderson signing so much, again, from like a real life football perspective and actually from a fantasy perspective in like a bit of a twist sort of way, is number one, like this team needed more offensive juice, because I like the wide receiver duo of DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, but there is absolutely nothing on that roster behind them. And even at tight end, Ian Thomas is intriguing, but I would still say unproven. And then it's McCaffrey and then pretty much no one else. Like, that's a pretty solid core to work with. But then you bring in a vertical threat like Robbie Anderson to be your two or your three. And then that's exciting, because we know that vertical threats like Robbie Anderson are natural coverage dictators. Like, teams have to account for them. And this is a team under Joe Brady that wants to play that LSU spread style, you know, a lot of three receiver sets, four receiver sets, a lot of what they did in New Orleans when Joe Brady and Tom and Teddy Bridgewater were both there. So I think that makes a lot of sense. You need to have a really good, and now Moore, Samuel, Anderson is a really intriguing three wide receiver set. And more targets to someone else and less targets to you are never a good thing from a fantasy perspective. But I think this is a good thing for Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore to shift into more respectable roles. Like, Moore already had a pretty good role, but like, Samuel last year was ninth in air yards. Like, I think it's pretty well established when you watch him play. Like, he can obviously, he has speed, but I think what makes him a great route runner is the separation and quickness on shorter routes. And I think Anderson kind of taking over that role and then allowing Samuel to move inside, outside, and use some of that quick separation will actually be a much better role than being a vertical threat in an offense with one of the worst, if not the worst, deep ball quarterbacks in the NFL like he was last year.
So comp it for me. Are you thinking, so you've got Anderson as your X and Moore as your Y. You can use Samuel as your Z, right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, what I'm hearing is like, again, like this isn't a straight copy and paste, but there is some overlap in terms of comparison between what Samuel could do and what Deebo Samuel did last year in San Francisco.
Yeah, something like that. I think even the more apt comparison, and this is the one that I've used before, like even last year, I think that Moore and Samuel are so similar to Thielen and Diggs, and then you had sort of the other, like the thing that Minnesota could never get, and they definitely still don't have it, is the other guy, you know, like their ex receiver was some goofball like, you know, Michael Floyd or Treadwell, who, by the way, a first round pick on the Falcons now. Let's go, Atlanta Falcons, all first round offense.
Like, in that noise.
Woo, right? You don't even need to pipe in all that crowd noise now that you got all these first round picks. But I think that having that X receiver that dictates coverage on the outside based on their vertical ability is a really strong addition to this offense. And I think it's good for Teddy Bridgewater, who I do think is a smart, accurate, efficient quarterback. Now he has three strong receivers to work with. And again, I think this is like from a fantasy perspective, it's like Samuel Anderson, probably not going to be like a big boom or anything. But I think if we know what one of these guys is, we know what Robbie Anderson is. And it's that sporadic deep threat that's not really, you know, a guy that you want to funnel your passing offense through. I still think Samuel has untapped potential left in there, especially in his contract year. He's a unrestricted free agent after 2020. And really, by the way, like my one point, like from a fantasy perspective too, like the player this is really good news for is Christian McCaffrey. Because like if the Panthers were going to like straight up tank, you know, which their moves like Anderson, Bridgewater, these type of signings show they are absolutely not like just thrown in the towel. I don't know if there is a clear plan here or what that plan is, but I think it's definitely not let's be as bad as possible in 2020. And having someone to dictate coverage gets guys out of the box. That's going to be really good for Christian McCaffrey, who is the fantasy player that we most care about in this offense.
Absolutely. Do you also think, though, that, I mean, and this I don't think is going to move the needle for his fantasy stock, but I do think there's a world in which Christian McCaffrey doesn't draw as many targets as he did last year. There's a regression there. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's possible. Like, there's always a chance that a player like McCaffrey catches 90 passes instead of 100 passes. And, you know, then you can, like, I think that McCaffrey will be the number one pick in pretty much every draft because that's just like the season he's coming off of. That's the way it is. But I mean, even consider coming into last year, Saquon Barkley, I think, was the first pick in 75% of our drafts or something like that on Yahoo. And like, it, you know, it was the, like, there was no need for it to be that wide of a gap. But so in anyways, my point is, yeah, we can probably have a real debate about is Saquon Barkley a better pick in 2020? Is Alvin Kamara, you know, all these other possible guys you could debate with Christian McCaffrey. But in the end, most people will side on McCaffrey, even if that's not the right answer.
So the Jets don't have Anderson anymore. He has left for Carolina. You know, I just really want to use this line that Brett wrote in the outline. Like, we got to this place without needing this transition that Brett wrote, but it is so good. I have to say it. So are you watching the Tiger King doc on Netflix? Because Robbie Anderson is joining the Jungle Cat Park in Carolina. For real, though, are you watching the Tiger King?
No, I have not watching it.
Matt, what are you doing? Like, how many lasagnas can you make? Like, Jesus Christ, how are you not watching Tiger King? Like, you will, well, you know what, congratulations, because you will be able to sleep at night. Congrats. You will never, if you aren't up with anxiety and insomnia because of what's going on globally right now anyway, then don't watch the Tiger King, because it will blow your mind so much that sleep will never come to you again.
Yeah, I've heard a bit about it, and like, we're considering starting it here at the house, but I haven't started it yet. We haven't started it yet. Been watching Schitt's Creek. It's a fun show.
Cool.
Also, can we come back to the lasagna point? When am I making lasagna?
I don't. Whatever the hell you're cooking, I don't know what you like recipes.
It's not lasagna.
Like, a lasagna is like one that you can, you know, freeze in case of an apocalypse. So that's why I picked it.
Well, don't worry. The fridge looks bad, but the freezer is stocked with a bunch of interesting things.
Very cool. You know, I didn't know how to make a lasagna. That's definitely not happening over here.
Yeah.
So anyway, Robbie Anderson joins the Jungle Cat Park in Carolina. Matt's regrettably not watching Tiger King, but the Jets are happy to be adding Breshad Perriman, who over the last few years, that I feel like over the past few years, he's been on a bit of a redemption tour, and they've all occurred in the last moments of those years/seasons.
Yeah,
flashes with the Browns and then again with the Bucks in 2019.
I said in many, like, those thousands of free agent pieces that I did, like, we all should remember that, like, the two seasons at the end of the year when he was called upon to be a solid contributor, Breshad Perriman was a solid contributor. Like, I thought that was an important reminder should he go to a team like the Eagles or the Packers. I don't know that it matters all that much. Had he returned to Tampa Bay and been like Tom Brady's number three receiver, I think it would have mattered. I don't know that it matters all that much now that he's like a complimentary player on the Jets. But it is a nice signing again in the real world, because this is one of the worst wide receiver rooms in the NFL as it stands. And I want to run this tweet by you, because I got a little bit of heat from Jets Twitter. And, you know, you're embedded with both of these guys that are going to kind of catch a stray here, Liz, in this thought. Okay. I said on the 25th, whatever, was that yesterday? That was yesterday.
I don't know, friend. I have no idea.
I said, considering all that the Browns, Bills, and Ravens have done to surround Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson with talent at the skill position spots, it has to be infuriating for Jets fans to look at the wide receiver and tight end spots for Sam Darnold. Now, obvious, look, number one, what I learned was there's a mix between how Jets fans feel about this, because some of them were like, yes, it's infuriating. Some were like, no, it's not. This is pretty standard business being a Jets fan. Everything is always terrible. And then there was a third section that was like, what are you talking about? Jamison Crowder is a stud. We have one of the best.
Get the f*** out of here, TFO. Oh, my God. Wait, how am I embedded with Jamison Crowder?
Well, not that player. Oh. The thing that the people really took umbrage with was that I included tight end there. Like, we have one of the best tight end rooms in the NFL. Because of your boy, Chris Herndon. The Jets fans have not let go that Chris Herndon, and he may very well be, but I don't think you can sit here and look at what the Jets have right now. Like, yeah, Ryan Griffin popped for some games last year. Neat. And like, Chris Herndon was good 2 years ago in his rookie year. Neat. He had exactly 7 yards last season amid being suspended and injured all the time. Like, I just think when you look at their wide receiver room, and I realize that there's a draft yet to come, and they could end up having Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb or whatever. And then they're starting to build something decent. But it's just when you look at what they've surrounded Josh Allen with, or Baker Mayfield, and even Lamar Jackson to a bit of a different degree, because they're very different quarterbacks. Like, what the Jets have done for Sam Darnold is, you know, and they've got a lot of problems on the offensive line. Like, it's just I'm a little worried about the guy, that he's not set up for success yet again when you're looking at Jamison Crowder and maybe a pretty good version of Breshad Perriman as your 1 and 2 receivers.
So it's interesting you said this, because I will be doing in the next week, over the next week and throughout the NFL draft, which is still going on, I'm doing these rookie snapshots of different players, and CeeDee Lamb is the first rookie that I will be snapshotting. And there's like, you know, pros, cons, overall take, origin story, background, stuff like that. And at the end, there's a fantasy fit. I will read you. This one's already done. It's not due for over a week, but I like to work ahead.
Wow, overachiever. Oof.
Well, you know. I will read you the blurb I've written for the fantasy fit verbatim. This is about CeeDee Lamb, right? And let's remember that the Jets are picking 11th overall at the end of next month. Philip Rivers would certainly appreciate a crafty young receiver like Lamb, but after trading away their first round pick to San Francisco in exchange for DeForest Buckner, I doubt the Sooner will still be on the board by the time the Colts pick. By the way, they're now in the second round is when they'll have their first pick, I believe 34th overall. Side note. The Jets, who are currently slated to select 11th overall, however, make a lot of sense. Given the weapons that franchises like the Cardinals and the Browns have surrounded their young quarterbacks with, it would behoove Grant Gangrene to do the same for Sam Darnold.
We're on the same page.
Almost exactly. I said Cardinals and Browns. You said other teams.
Cardinals. I specifically grouped like that same draft class, you know, and in that same draft class, I would have just, you know, done exactly what the NFL has done and forgets that Josh Rosen is even a person, which is deserved, by the way. Like, how are we still doing this with Josh Rosen? By the way, like, I just was stunned that there are Jets fans out there that have talked themselves into like, no, this is actually a pretty good group. I realize the draft is still yet to come. They could maybe even double up at the wide receiver position in a very strong draft class. But like, as things stand right now, you got to kind of be like, yikes, this is a rough group for Sam Darnold to be working with. Because a lot of them also point out, well, we needed to fix the offensive line first. It's like, you ain't done that either. So,
well, you tried to do that last year and it didn't work out. The poor guy, like, from mono to ghost, it's not been an easy ride for this kid.
But they did get George Fant to be their left tackle from the Seattle Seahawks. And whenever you can take a Seahawks cast off to be one of your starters, that's always a good thing.
Speaking of cast-offs, let's talk about Devin Funchess, because my oh my, Jimmy Graham, not a wide receiver, but also Devin Funchess, not also really a wide receiver. Jimmy Graham leaves, Devin Funchess joins. What an amazing weapon for Aaron Rodgers here.
I kind of think this is like sneaky, could be good, you know?
I think this might be fine depth, but I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I don't like any of this.
No, I mean, we wish Rodgers was like rocking with a much better receiver core than Davante Adams, Devin Funchess, and a bunch of but
or I think, or if you want to convert Devin Funchess this late in his career back to being a tight end like he was kind of in Michigan, then fine, let's do that.
Yeah, I think there were times where Funchess played pretty good as like an outside X receiver for the Panthers. Like he had that 1 year in 2017 when he had a really good season, you know, and then they phased him out of the operation. Like, I don't think he's that good of a player, but I think there's a chance that there's a chance Devin Funchess could be better than Geronimo Allison, or I think there's a chance he could be better than Marquez Valdes.
That bar, Scantling. Matt. Way to go out on a limb.
if they don't crush the draft, you know, if they don't double up at wide receiver in the draft, if Devin Funchess is Aaron Rodgers' number three receiver behind Davante Adams and his Thanksgiving guest, Alan Lazard, then, Aaron Rodgers, Danica Patrick, and Alan Lazard having a three-person Thanksgiving there because no one else got invited. I think there's a chance that this is a pretty good situation for Funchess. And honestly, if he's your number three receiver, if he's healthy — he was not healthy all last year — you could do a lot worse.
Do you know that Aaron Rodgers and Danica Patrick bought Robbie Williams' house in Malibu? Like, they rented it all last summer and then went ahead and bought it. And so they have like a Malibu.
Robin Williams? Like,
no, Robbie Williams, like the singer from England.
I don't even know who that is.
I barely know who he is. He was like a heartthrob, I think, in the early aughts. Brett probably knows better than me, frankly.
Brett probably has his full collection on vinyl,
maybe,
I think.
Maybe. But Robbie Williams, I don't know. He was like a British heartthrob singer type. He's like kind of busted right now. But I did. I was on a hike once and the person I was with was like, oh my gosh, that's Robbie Williams. And I was like, I don't know who that is. Which is why I knew who he was when I saw the news that Danica and Aaron bought his Malibu estate for like $20 million. I don't, it's like a, I, that's maybe, Shout out maybe to it's them. $10 million. I don't know. It's millions of dollars and it's like a 5-bedroom house.
Shout out to them. It's just,
yeah.
It's hyper depressing to think about buying things in Los Angeles. It's gross.
So that's our show.
That's it.
let's not end on a wholly negative point. Matt.
Well, for most of the country, they're like, we don't give a about buying prices in Los Angeles. It's fine. Well, I mean, I don't know. No, probably don't want to buy anything right now, but yeah. Anyways, continue.
So just so we end on a nice note, listen, if you were just looking for fantasy information, you can stop listening now. Like, we're going to tell you who to follow on social and promote some stuff. But Matt, a moment of lasagna redemption for you and a moment to end on a positive note. A month or so ago, I don't know when, I can't remember the days, you said that your favorite thing about the off season was trying new recipes. So is there one that you have tried out that you've liked, especially in this time of being insular?
Well, the best thing I think I've made since we've been self-quarantined or whatever is I have a Big Green Egg, the smoker. I smoked the whole chicken. That was pretty awesome. But because most people don't have that, I'll pass over that. And I will share, this is just, no one's going to like this, but I think you might actually enjoy this, Liz, because it is very California. Got my, you know, there's not much at the grocery store. As I mentioned last, I went there, got myself a bunch of gluten-free pasta. Cause again, the only thing that's left is gluten-free stuff. And so had the gluten-free pasta, the grilled chicken, whatever. And then for the sauce of it, cause I was like, okay, we're a little light on anything to make, you know, any sort of sauce. I made what is essentially like a non-dairy, almost like an Alfredo type sauce. It had avocado, coconut milk, olive oil, garlic, parsley. I think that's it. But it was honestly incredible. That was probably the best thing that I've never made before that I have made in quarantine. That pasta dish came out really well. And the sauce, you know, again, I said to my girlfriend, I was like, imagine if we ate like regular pasta and then like an actual Alfredo sauce, like how much we'd feel like right now. But felt pretty good after the gluten-free and the avocado coconut milk based Alfredo-ish sauce.
Was the pasta that bonza pasta?
No, it was actually like needed to be refrigerated pasta. That's the reason I was able to get it, because, you know, obviously everyone is grabbing all the non-perishable stuff to stock up for, you know, the non-food shortage that we have here in LA. And I think that, but no, the Bonza stuff is great, by the way. That was very good.
I like that a lot. I haven't been able to find any of that at the market, though.
Nope.
The one thing, so yesterday I decided to bake, which is a sure sign of the apocalypse coming. And we have this kumquat tree, and like, what the F do you do with kumquats? I am doing things with kumquats. The thing I did, though, I made a kumquat almond tea cake and like, like reduced the fruit and used a paring knife to get the seeds out and pureed it. And I was just like, yes, I'm going to do this. All of my type A energy is going right into this 6x3 loaf of kumquat almond tea cake. And then this morning I gave it to my kids for breakfast. My 6-year-old took one bite, spit it out, and he was like, "Mommy, this is sour."
Oh, come on.
I know. And I was like, bro, there's like no flour at the grocery store. I have to use almond flour to do anything. And I was like, what do you mean? This is like artisan pound cake. Like, eat it. And he was like, no. I'm like, fine. Well, good luck buying cereal, kid. Anyway, it's been a great day. I also, because that happened, then decided to make kumquat infused vodka. So I think I should probably just stick to spirits.
There we go. Shout out to the kumquat tree for at least making a good drink. That is one thing that I think it's like, if tomorrow is Friday, we've decided we're definitely going to, you know, order from like places in the area, take out to support some local places or whatever. But that's like the only thing that I'm like, okay, I guess it's the weekend. Like, can I drink like now, or wait, have I just been drinking this entire time? Like, what is the situation here with the alcohol? That's probably the toughest.
I got a timer on my phone, like a member of the greatest generation, telling me when it's happy hour.
Very nice. Excellent.
That's the only way I can keep some semblance of all of the hours just bleeding into one another. But on that actually more positive note, we are going to end the show, but you should definitely check out another Yahoo podcast, because we are still rolling the NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor. We've got the fantasy basketball and the fantasy baseball podcast posted up, and we may have a special announcement next week about the Yahoo fantasy football game. So be sure to come back here and listen to that. In the meantime, you can follow us on all the social handles at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, and it's at Yahoo Fantasy Sports on Instagram. I'm at LizLoza_FF on both platforms, and that is at Matt Harmon _BYB on both platforms. And we are out.